Hi, this is Tracy Hales Fass with Right on Four Corners on KSJE 90.9 FM in Farmington, New Mexico. Today, I'm talking to Chris Neri about her new book, Hopscotch Life. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning, Tracy. Great to be here talking to you.
Yeah, I really enjoyed Hopscotch Life. And your...
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, your protagonist, Plum Tardy, is just a great character.
She is. She was wonderful. She was great to write. She was great fun. And she just seemed to walk onto the page complete. So it was great having the privilege of spending time in a critical time in her life.
It was fun spending time in her life as a reader, you know. She was someone I kept rooting for. And I guess before we proceed further, you should give our listeners kind of a synopsis of Hopscotch Life.
Hopscotch Life does take place in a critical time in Plum's life. She's not in a good place at the start. Her mom, Crystal, is in a vegetative state, although Plum's in denial precisely about what's wrong with Crystal. Then, through no fault of her own, she loses her job, and she then discovers that her fiancé, Noah, is having an affair with a coworker. And if that wasn't bad enough, she learns he's also cheated her financially. He's illegally stolen their equity in the house they own together. Since Noah is a commercial real estate realtor, he is involved in buying up land around the country, in small towns around the country, for a big box store called Budget Mart. And one of those small towns is the fictional town of Applewood, Arizona. Plum and Noah live in Santa Monica, California, and she was raised in that area. So Applewood is a place that someone from her childhood used to talk about, and Plum always thought it sounded wonderful. So after many crushing blows on this one day, Plum just needs to get away, and she chooses to go to Applewood. But before she leaves, she comes across a bag of cash that she's absolutely convinced Noah amassed by stealing her home equity. And she takes that on the way out the door. So that she finds the town of Applewood to be absolutely enchanting. She even discovers that her old high school crush lives there. And it's a more erratic move for Plum than her usual hopscotch moves, but she actually begins setting up a new life in this new town. She thinks it's the perfect town. It may be, may not. She thinks she's found the perfect new man. Has she? You know. She thinks she's found a perfect new career. But because Plum always makes hopscotch choices, I can tell the reader that her future will proceed on a rather cockeyed path, and that money she took is definitely going to come back to bite her. And I think the reader will find that there are plenty of really big surprises in this novel.
There really are. Yeah, it's spellbinding. It's just great. You know, like I said, not just Plum is a very real character, but the others are great and really believable, too.
That's wonderful to hear. Thank you.
But this book, Hopscotch Life, is a little bit of a deviation from what you usually write, is it not?
It is. I started out, when I wrote fiction, I started out in mystery. Mm-hmm. And I have four published mysteries and some published thrillers. And then I moved into fantasy, really more paranormal mysteries, but definitely heavy in the fantasy. And one day, I mean, I read everything. I have been a voracious reader all of my life. And one day, and I also was a bookseller for 10 years, so, you know, when you're a bookseller, you absolutely have to read everything.
Right.
But one day I was just reading a general fiction novel that dealt with a character's journey, and I just thought, I'd love to do this too. And it didn't happen immediately, but one day Plum just walked into my life, and I knew we were going to write her story together.
It feels that way. So how long did it take you to write her then?
It took a while because it was kind of a time in my life where I was working multiple jobs. So I would write in little fits and starts over a period of a couple of years. And then I put it aside for a while. And I moved from Arizona to New Mexico and then picked it up and finished it up here. And thankfully, it found a publisher right away.
Mm-hmm. Do you want to read a little bit for us from Hopscotch Life?
I would love to. What I'd like to do is just read a couple of paragraphs about how Plum rolls.
Okay.
And then move on to the end of that chapter.
Great.
Plum often thought that if life were a race, complete with starting point and finish line, while other people sprinted or jogged through that race course, she was off somewhere playing hopscotch, taking a jump here, another there, with no pattern that ever made sense to anyone else, or even sometimes to Plum. Hopscotch accentuated how different Plum was and made her wish that she could be more like everyone else and less like her. She couldn't have said exactly what like everyone else meant, but just as with the Supreme Court's definition of porn, she knew it when she saw it. When she looked at someone like her sister Sunny and some of the women Noah worked with, she saw it in spades. When she looked in the mirror, she saw someone so out of sync with everyone else, she would always fumble through life, for reasons Plum could never quite figure out. Now I'm going to shift to the end of the chapter after she's caught her fiancé in the act with his co-worker and she's discovered he cheated her financially.
Okay.
With her shock beginning to fade, the pain in her heart swelled. She was going to cry. The birth threat had passed, but in another moment she was going to start crying and she wouldn't be able to stop. Her eyes would turn red and she would choke and gasp and snot would dribble down her face. Plum couldn't bear for either of them to see her like that. She couldn't become that much of a victim. She turned away, hoping her legs wouldn't collapse under her. If you give us a few minutes, we'll go to a hotel tonight, Noah said, or Claire's place. If Claire had a place, why were they here? How could he be so cruel as to use the bed he'd shared with her? Don't do me any favors, Plum spat gruffly. The struggle to hold back tears, taking everything she had. Plum, let her go, Claire said with such social ease. She might have been making casual conversation at a cocktail party instead of just having bedded someone else's fiancé. Stumbling a few steps away from the bedroom, Plum knew she'd made a dreadful mistake. She should have accepted his offer to leave. She had nowhere to go. She couldn't stay here, not with Claire looking down on her, and especially not with Noah pitying her for being the victim of his own double treachery. Besides, it had never been her house, not really. Now, when it wouldn't be legally, she didn't want to be surrounded by Noah's sterile choices. She'd have to be the one paying for a hotel tonight. She, who lost her job, lost her home, and lost the man she loved. How was it possible that on this day she'd been screwed by everyone in every way possible except for the one way she would have welcomed? Her going nowhere life had truly come to an abrupt and miserable end. Plum stumbled out to the den, trying to block out the sound of murmuring voices still coming from the bedroom. With one brief glance at the maps tacked to the wall, she realized the one tiny advantage to this situation. She could take that vacation she needed after all, and she could go anywhere without regard to what anyone else wanted. She didn't have to take a hotel here in town where she might run into someone who knew Noah or Claire. She could go somewhere else, anywhere. Not for long, of course. She'd need another job, preferably sooner than later. And she still had Crystal to think about, but none of it had to be immediate. Where could she go? She glanced at the wall over Noah's desk. A desperate longing to take something from him overcame her. I need maps. She began yanking Noah's maps from the wall. Anger overtook her pain. Plum scarcely heard her own breathlessness as she crushed those unfolded maps beneath her arm. She didn't hear anything apart from the sound of the thumbtacks hitting the hardwood floor when she ripped the maps away, sending the tacks flying. She was about to turn away, to rush outside, clutching her map booty, when she saw it. Noah's Tony Hartman satchel. When she saw it earlier this afternoon, that had been on top of it, his stack of luggage in their closet. Now it rested on the desk chair, which was pulled a couple of feet away from the desk, not pushed in as she had left it, with the top unbuckled. When Plum glanced into it, she choked. The satchel was filled with money, fat bundles of cash, loads of them. Was this what Noah did with the money she gave him every month for their mortgage payment? Or was it the cash from the second mortgage he took on the house by forging her name? Rage mushroomed in Plum. How dare he? Plum latched the top of the satchel shut and yanked it off the chair. Heavy sucker. Without giving it a thought, she took the satchel. Ha! Who's screwing whom now? After grabbing her tote bag where she dropped it on the floor, she sailed out the front door. And this time, she did slam it.
You say that Plum Tardy made herself known to you. Does that mean you're kind of the pantser type of writer?
No, not really.
Uh-huh.
But I spend a long time, I consider myself a moderate planner.
Okay.
So I know a certain amount. I know my characters very well. I do a considerable character work, even when they do seem to come to me whole. Mm-hmm. I explore them at a considerable depth, let's say.
Okay.
And so I spend a considerable amount of time planning it, seeing parts of the plot, really understanding and knowing my character, hearing their voices so that they have unique voices on the page.
Mm-hmm.
Now, with all of that said, there's always other things I don't know, and I don't worry about not knowing. I see scenes that, based on my initial knowledge, do not seem to link up to anything, but I call those scenes beacons in the darkness, and I write towards them, and somehow the means to connect what I know to the beacons always comes together.
Oh, I love it. Mm-hmm.
So partial pantser, partial planner.
Great. So do you write one book at a time?
Yes, I do.
Mm-hmm.
I probably could. Well, sometimes I've probably had a short story going mm-hmm. in addition to a novel, you know, that I can switch off and on. I'm kind of focused, so I don't think I could comfortably write two novels at the same time, at least not two novels that are at the same stage. I could probably revise mm-hmm. and write, but I would still probably end up giving one a short shrift.
Now, before we went on air, we talked about Silver City and how many writers and other artisans are there. Does that mean you meet regularly with the other writers and share your workshop, as it were?
We do. We have an event every month called Word Feast, and there's one feature writer per month, and then we have an open mic, and everyone gets to read. Even now that we're locked down, we've been doing it online.
Oh, great.
So anyone is also welcome to come and read in these situations. There's a fair number of writers' groups. There's a fair number of workshops. I was scheduled to do a number of local workshops, which will be rescheduled for later.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. It's a very close-knit writing community here.
And that really helps support you in, but not only during this time, but always in your writing, right?
It does. Mm-hmm. And you know that there's always people you can go to if you're having a hard time. There's other people who will always understand and help and lend support. Considering that most of us didn't start out here, that mm-hmm. we came from someplace else, it's really a very close-knit community.
It sounds like it. I've talked to several writers from that little area, so I think that's fascinating that it attracts that kind of person. That's great.
Well, I think it has a distinct, the town has a distinct personality, and it may not have always been the case, but it is the case now. And it's not just the writing and the art, but the buildings in town are painted very colorfully.
Oh.
There are murals done all over town. Those are the work of a little committee, and they, because there's not as much art in the schools, they have the kids work on the murals.
Oh.
They're an active part of planning them and painting them. So it's not just something people talk about. I mean, it's really part of life here.
Oh, that's great.
And I think because it is, it attracts new people that fit in with that.
Well, it's sort of evolved into what it is.
Yes, I think so. I wasn't here 20, 25 years ago, but from what people say, it wasn't always the same.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it has evolved into being an artistic community.
Oh, that's exciting. Now,
yeah, I think so.
As well as writing, and writing a lot, you are also a writing teacher and writing coach.
Yes. Yes, I teach usually one or two classes a year, quarterly classes, for mm-hmm. the UCLA Extension Schools Writers Program. And then I teach for other organizations. There are numerous writers' organizations across the country that hire teachers for online classes. And I teach those. And I work privately with some people who have asked me to.
Mm-hmm. So have you always been a writer?
I think probably so. When I was a little kid, I remember before I could read, I used to make up stories to go with the pictures in the Sunday comic strip. So I think that was the stuff. But yeah, I didn't really write seriously, though, until maybe 30, 35 years ago. I used to write articles. There mm-hmm. were a lot of, for magazines, there were a lot of magazines then. They had a lot of content. It was really a good way to be a writer. But after a while, it just felt kind of soulless to me, and I started writing fiction and haven't stopped.
Good. I'm glad. Now, what's next?
I'm currently writing another book, the third book in my magical series.
Oh, good.
This started out featuring a fake psychic and a modern goddess who is an FBI agent.
Oh.
And the fake psychic got struck by lightning, and now she is a straight-up regular psychic, real psychic, except she's having a lot of trouble controlling her gift and making sense of it. So I'm writing the third book in the series. It is tentatively called Magical Mushrooms, and I'm having a lot of fun with that.
Great. Will we see Tracy Eaton again?
I think so. And what I'd really like to do, I just recently wrote a story with Tracy and her mom and cohort.
Mm-hmm.
So I think what will happen is that before we see another book, there'll be, I have written several stories with Tracy. I think there will be a collection of Tracy Eaton stories that will come out.
Oh, good.
And then probably another novel at some point.
So is she as real to you as Plum Tardy?
They are all incredibly real to me. Tracy is the adult daughter of eccentric Hollywood stars, and they're kind of like an old-fashioned madcap comedies that happen to be mysteries. When I first started having those published, people would say, "Who are your parents?" Assuming that my parents were movie stars, which was absolutely not the case. All of these people just live in my imagination.
Mm-hmm. I love that aspect of being a writer, that we have so many invisible friends.
Yes, you don't have to give them up at adulthood.
That's right. You say you're a plotter and not as much of a pantser, but what is your writing process? Then do you write every day? Or?
I like to say that I sneak up on my writing.
Oh.
I think about scenes for a long time. They wake me up at night, and I might spend an hour or so thinking about it and then go back to sleep. I try out different things, and then I don't have a particular time of the day. I just sit down and I write it straight through, I write a chapter straight through, and it's a pretty good first draft at that point.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a little, it might be different from many people who write a particular time every day. I don't. It's when it happens.
Right.
But I do write down the number of words I've written on any day that I write. So I do like to make sure that there's a good pattern mm-hmm. of writing an acceptable number of words. But I don't require it to be every day. And I don't worry too much if a chapter seems to be lagging, because I know there'll come a point when I'm ready to do it and it will just happen.
That's great. You talked about waking up at night thinking about chapters and scenes.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the whole mm-hmm. inside the head thing is underrated, because so much does happen there.
It's true. And I also have a pattern of, if I'm a little stuck, I will, before I go to bed, I will tell myself that I will know the answer in the morning.
Oh, I love that.
And sometimes it's right away, and sometimes it'll kind of float in over hours. But really, I think the unconscious is really quite a magical part of writing. It does need a certain amount of respect, because, I think that's where all these characters and the plots and everything else come from.
Right. I think so, too. And your books have won many awards.
I've been really very fortunate. Some of them have been nominated for major awards. Some have won. My most recent was winning the New Mexico Arizona Book Award
yes.
for my second magical book called Magical Alienation. I've been really very fortunate.
Well, congratulations on that, and well deserved. Now, our listeners can also find you on the web at chrisneary.com, right?
Correct, yes.
That's K-R-I-S-N-E-R-I.
Correct, yes. Yes. And it's a new website, and it may have a few more tweaks, but I like it. It's pretty.
It's very well done, and I'm sure that when we're able to go out and about again, you'll update the presentations.
Yes, yes, definitely. And I'm in touch with all of the people I've scheduled things with, and, you know, I know we will reschedule, but
right.
Not right now.
Right, right. It's kind of, everything's on hold right now.
Right,
but exactly. That's exciting. Like you said, you're doing your writer's workshops online, and that's great to keep in touch
yes.
like that and get that support.
Yeah. Even my writer's group, we mostly exchange our chapters for each other online, I mean, through email,
mm-hmm.
because, you know, it's easier than to just read it in person. But
right.
we do try to have Zoom meetings so we at least can chat and keep that personal connection going.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of people are today.
I do too. And you're right that it's one thing to read each other's work and make comments, but there's also the whole aspect of talking about what's going to happen next and what do you think I should do with mm-hmm. this character, and I've got myself backed in a corner, that kind of thing.
Right, exactly. And you need... if you're trusting your work with a group of people, you need to keep that strong, intimate connection going.
Right. Well, we look forward to the next book. And do you think we'll see Plum Tardy again?
No, I don't know. I think about it sometimes. I think, given who she is, she has to get in more trouble in the future.
That's what I was thinking.
So I think maybe there's a possibility. I think she'll just tell me when it's time.
I think she will. I hope to see her again. Well, it's been a pleasure talking with you. And again, listeners can find your books wherever books are sold and at chrisneary.com.
Correct, yes.
Good.
It's been a pleasure talking to you, too.
Tracy. And you, too. I look forward to more.
Oh, thank you. Me, too.
Great. And that was Chris Neary talking about her book, Hopscotch Life, and about her other books, The Writing Life, etc. This is Tracy Hales Vass with Right on Four Corners on KSJE 90.9 FM and on KSJE.com.